Lucy Hawking is an award-winning teacher, novelist, and the daughter of theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking. Before his death in 2018, the duo had collaborated on a number of works, including the fictional space adventure, George. Their last work together is a compilation of essays entitled Unlocking the Universe. It's just been published, and I've been talking with Lucy Hawking from London.
Good morning, Hamish.
It's coming up on 2 years since your father passed away. In fact, the anniversary, I think, is a month away. It was a great loss for the world and clearly even greater for yourself. How do you reflect on that time now?
I think grief for all of us is very, very hard to handle because you're living without the presence of somebody who obviously I've spent my whole life with. And so working on projects like this where I kind of hear my father's voice through the work he did and also get to collaborate with a wide range of scientists talking about all these fascinating and diverse topics is very comforting, except that, of course, he can't see this book, which he would have loved.
And so, in a sense, is doing this sort of work part of that grief process, that grief experience?
Well, we worked together over a long period of time in George's Secret Key. We started working on George's Secret Key, the first book in the series, 14 years ago. And over all those years, so many scientists contributed essays to the book series on really what sound like very complex topics for the average person, like dark matter, the beginning of the universe, what happens inside a black hole. And so we'd collected all these great essays from contributing scientists. And I thought it would be a lovely way to end the series and a fitting tribute to my father's career in science and his desire to make science accessible to the widest possible audience by bringing them all together and finishing the book series in a kind of big way that really allowed us to look back and see how much work we had done.
A lot of people would absolutely walk the opposite direction when someone thought of working with their parent or a parent proposed it. How did you two come to start collaborating?
So a child came up to my father at my son's birthday party. Actually, it was one of my son's friends, and he just very simply said to him, "Stephen, you know, what would happen to me if I fell in a black hole?" And my father said, "You'd be turned into spaghetti." And it was such a great question and such a great answer that I thought there's something in this. Like, we had all these kids who really wanted to know the answer to the question. They were absolutely gripped by it. And then my father giving this answer that was both correct and profound, but also used something that a child could relate to. You know, spaghetti, all kids know what spaghetti is. And I thought, this is really interesting. You know, there's a story here. How would a boy fall in a black hole? What would a boy be doing floating around in space? Would we ever get him back? And so we kind of set out to write a story really for that small boy to say, this is what would happen to you if you fell in a black hole. But we wanted to put it in the context of an adventure story, because that's how you grab kids' imaginations, but make all the science real science. And so that was kind of where it started. A lot of people asked me about working with my dad, and yes, it was quite scary at first, I have to say, because it felt like kind of all those times he supervised my homework, except now as an adult.
What was he like supervising homework?
Well, that again, he didn't pull his punches if he thought you hadn't done a good enough job. He would be like, no, go back and do that again. No, you can do better. I mean, he wasn't handing out A grades to his kids freely. He had high standards and he expected us to try and to work hard and to make an effort ourselves to understand what we were working with. And only once we'd made that effort would he come in and give us a clue.
Tough.
I know. Tough. high standards.
I mean, this book is, it would seem to me, delivered for the hungry mind, for the young hungry mind. But I wonder...
All for the old hungry mind. I've been surprised since the book came out, quite a lot of adults have said how much they're enjoying it, that they can read it, that it's accessible, and that it sort of explains things to them in context. So it gives them a sort of way into these enormous topics, either about the universe or quite a lot of it is about, you know, life on Earth and what does the future hold for us.
I did wonder, looking through this, what the gift is to communicating very complex things, because I suppose in this job we interview a lot of different scientists and a lot of people with expertise, and some are brilliant at conveying the detail without losing the complexity. Others not so much. What do you think is the key?
I think you've kind of summed it up. It's in the detail, and explaining the complexity, and not losing those two aspects. Like if you simplify something too much, then actually it becomes kind of meaningless. And if you overcomplicate something, then you probably lose your reader, especially if you're young. And so very much the brief with these scientists was to ask them to put it in a narrative style, as though each essay was actually a story. And to keep remembering, what are the points of relevance about your topic to the life of your reader? How are they going to, you know, you need to create a relationship between the reader and your topic. If you think about the boy in the black hole, the question was about what would happen to me. It wasn't what's inside a black hole. It was all about a personal experience with this abstract, complex, bizarre, distant, violent phenomena. And so that's kind of, I think the key, and I think that's why the essays really work, because they're chatty, they're fun, and they set out, and they all have a sort of story arc to them. So it's like reading a little story about all of these different topics.
There is a section here on climate change, and I know you've attempted to tackle science denialism more broadly. How do you think you sort of solve that challenge? I mean, we obviously live in a time, you'd be aware of some of the conversations that happen here in Australia, particularly around the politics of all of this. How do you navigate your way through this?
Well, we've got an essay in the book called Flat Earthers, Moon Hoaxes and Anti-Vaxxers. And that comes from a psychologist called Dr. Sophie Hoggetts, who I met last summer. I co-wrote a show to celebrate the Apollo moon landings for the anniversary. And she was one of the people who participated in this show, which was kind of interactive, because the question we put to her is, why do people think the moon landings were fake? And does it matter if people think the moon landings were fake? And her answer was, yes, it does matter, because it's a kind of, you can have gateway conspiracy theories that lead you to other ones. So if you believe the moon landings were fake or that the Earth is flat, you were more likely to get sucked into conspiracy theories about climate change, for example. And she's got a lovely passage in her essay, which really kind of speaks to the heart of this book and the point of this book, which is about the need for scientists to communicate what they do in a way that is inclusive, that is conversational, and that doesn't set out to belittle people, but sets out to include them and try and understand where people who have, you know, science denial or whatever you want to call it, doesn't set out to patronize them, but tries to kind of persuade them of the other narrative, the narrative that is based on hard evidence.
And do you have a view as to how that is done when it comes to climate? Because it would seem to me, listening to feedback from people that don't necessarily accept the science or feel like it's the whole issue of climate change is over-egged, that does seem to be a feeling that they have, that they're being patronised to, they're being told they're nuts if they don't accept it all.
Well, exactly. On the climate change story, there is quite a sort of generational divide in that. And that's one of the reasons why I chose the author that we have in the book, is because she's 15 years old. And I thought it was really important to have someone from her generation stating what it looks like as a 15-year-old to be faced with what that generation very obviously considers the evidence, their fears for the future, their feeling of hopelessness that it's not being addressed. Because I think, as you said, there is a huge amount of evidence. You know, we've done essays with brilliant, brilliant climate change experts before. But I thought it was important to have a young voice, because I think perhaps that is going to be one of the most potent arguments, if you like, to help the world sort of shift direction towards an acceptance of climate science, is this pressure coming up from a young generation who are just saying that's not good enough.
Lucy Hawking, it's been tremendously interesting talking to you this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Lucy Hawking is a science educator and novelist. Her latest work, completed in partnership with her father, Stephen Hawking, is a collection of essays by the great scientists and thinkers. It's entitled Unlocking the Universe.